Hello and welcome to another episode of Agility on the Ear. Today is again the episode in English. In order not to moderate the episode every time the same way, I would like to introduce my today's guest in their own words. I started with Agility 13 years ago. First, very shortly with my late mixed breed, but he was much more interested in running away from the curse, and I was young and had zero experience. But very shortly after, I have gotten a working Kelpie named Will, with who I started seriously competing and participating in a few European Open competitions. Will is today almost 14 and happily enjoying retirement. With my Croatian sheepdog Riz, I went to my first Agility World Championship and loved it. At a similar time, I started running with my first borrowed Border Collie Viz. Owned by my good friends, with WOM, some super cool stuff started, like podiums on some bigger international competitions and also representing Croatia at AWC. Unfortunately, an injury cut his career short. I kept competing with his sister Wei, also owned by another friend. Viz is no longer with us. He left us tragically last December. And Wei is approaching 10 and slowly also going into retirement. Unfortunately, Corona cut some of the last fun years with her. I also have a Sheltie, Boom, who runs in medium. He introduced me to a whole new world of crazy fast challenges that forced me to bring my skills training and general agility game to another level. We already have some big podiums behind us, like Norwegian Open, Moravia Open, Slovenian Open, but hopefully the best is yet to come since he only participated in one European Open and AWC when he was still quite young. But he for sure loved his experience and we keep training and hoping for more. I also have few younger Border Collies that are just starting to seriously compete. So who knows what the future brings. In 2017, I started my own agility club with my friend and colleague Alan Marikovic. We train on an outdoor field as well as in a rented sport hall. Croatia is way too small in agility to even dream about a pure agility hall, but who knows what life brings in the future. We hope to finally organize a huge international competition, Croatian Open, in 2022. It has been my dream since 2020, but Corona messed up with the plans in the last years. So third time is the charm. Now I can say hello and welcome Nina Kregel from Croatia.
Hello, I'm happy to be here.
And we are happy that you find some time for us.
Yeah, I'm happy with that as well. It's been quite hectic here for a while.
So let's start with your story of how you got the dog.
Oof, well, I've actually had a dog my entire life, but it was like a family dog. It was my mother's dog, and he was a little bit older than me, and I didn't like him, and he didn't like me. From the moment I came into my parents' life, he was just like thinking how to get rid of me. And I didn't like him because I always wanted my own dog and my parents didn't want me to have my own dog while we have the family dog. So I've had a dog since I know about myself, but we didn't have really the best relationship. And of course, I mean, he was like a Maltese mix. He was really funny and he had many, many issues and he was spoiled as hell and my mother was in love with him. But he managed to live until he was 17, so that was also pretty annoying, I have to say. Because of that rule, we will not get another dog while this dog is still alive. I loved him, of course, but he was really like one piece of work type of dog. And only after he left us, then I got my very own dog, although my parents didn't want me to, but I pretended to have found one, although I didn't found one. I adopted him, and I kind of brought him home. And that was like my first mixed breed that was supposed to be totally my dog. So that's a little bit of a story. I had dogs my whole life, but I had to wait for a very, very long time before I got really a dog of my own that actually wanted to do something with me. It didn't just see me as a rival with my mother. It was a really funny childhood. Doesn't matter.
Sounds like that, yeah. And how was it then to have your own dog?
Well, it was also hard because I really didn't know anything. Like, I got him because I wanted to do dog sports. I wanted to do that since I was a little kid, and I watched on television there was like one really cool show about animals and pets and so on that was airing for like 30 years. They actually canceled it just recently, a couple of years ago, and I watched it my whole childhood. And I watched one episode a long time ago, I think I was maybe 5 or 6. They were talking about agility, and I saw some clips from there, and I really liked it, and I really wanted to do agility with the dog, but I couldn't because this old family dog, there was no chance. He didn't want to do anything with me. And my mixed breed, when I got him, it was more challenging than I anticipated. I maybe kind of took things for granted that it would just happen, but it didn't happen. He was like a little bit hunting dog as well, so he had a mind of his own. And yeah, let's say he made me work for everything, like from this beginning classes and so on, like obedience, basic obedience, the stuff that you basically take a dog and just calm up and say, okay, I want to do something with the dog, up until the moment that we started our first agility lessons. And he kind of liked to run, but more off course than on course, for example. So that was also a little bit challenging at the time, and I didn't know how to do, what to do and how to fix it and so on. So it wasn't really easy with him as well.
And did you had at this time some trainers, or you went there to a club?
Yeah, I went to a club, which is like the biggest club that it's here. I mean, Croatia is a very small country, and in agility world, it is a very small country. We have very few clubs, and in the main city that I still technically live in, a little bit outside, but at the time I lived in, there was only one big club that was doing agility at the time. There were a little bit more of them doing like obedience and so on, but for agility, only that one. So I basically just went there for like first some obedience classes because they thought you have to do it before you do agility. And then I started like the basic agility class that they were offering for people. Now it will sound stupid when I say from the street, but like anybody who wanted to come and do agility with the dog. So I had some trainers there, but I don't think anybody that I can mention in a way that anybody would know about these people. Some of them I don't think even do agility anymore. It was quite some time ago.
Okay. And how was your agility training there? How was it then in the class? How looks it?
Well, there was like this funny specific type of training that I think it didn't change until today. I'm not in that club anymore, but they have the same layout. You would come there 2 times a week, like for 1.5 hours, and they always had exactly the same time. It was like from 7 to 9:30 or from 9:30 to 10. That was like the time that they had classes of any kind, both obedience and agility. And you would come there, and it was like, let's say 10-ish people per group. No, and you were doing like first in this basic agility class, some smaller stuff and learning obstacles and so on. And then later some courses. It was not, I have to say, that much advanced and no really one-on-one approach or anything like that. It was more like we called it like a training type, you know, you do your course and then you wait your turn and then again and then again. And if you're lucky, you do it 2-3 times and then you go home, but you don't know any better. So you're happy, you know, when you're there with the dog. And I was happy if my dog wanted to stay with me on that training. So I really didn't have big expectations anymore at the time.
Okay, so not really a technical training. It was more like
making something
with the dog.
No, it was more like, I mean, I thought it was technical training at the time, but agility has also changed so much. And the way we think about it has changed so much that today, when I think about it, it was more like really having fun, you know. And nothing really super technical. We didn't even have like any good contact training and so on, but I guess that's a problem everywhere, not only in that club. That also didn't change until today, unfortunately. So yeah, it was more kind of teaching you some stuff, how to do a front cross. What is the front cross? I mean, you come from the street, no idea what is a front cross, what is a blind cross that you have to do, and how to even connect to obstacles, how to say commands and run at the same time. Now, when I think about it, it was really as basic as it can be, but maybe at the time, everything looked amazing. I mean, I loved it. That was kind of the first thing that I found myself doing that I could be there for an hour and a half and literally not think about anything else. You know, so despite the fact that my mixed breed didn't really want to be there sometimes and he had good days or bad days, we still had really a lot of fun. I really loved it there. It was kind of my, I don't know, refugee or how you say it.
Yeah. When you look back at your agility start, what do you feel then?
Good emotions, mostly, like positive ones. A little bit of nostalgia, because there were some people involved at the time that are not in agility anymore. And, you know, when you lose, when you don't have the same interest with some people anymore, then it's very hard to maintain contact and so on. And some stuff really changed. But mostly, yeah, I think it was cool. Despite it maybe not being the perfect beginning, I really, really liked it. And I don't think I would trade a lot. Even my mixed breed, he taught me a lot, although I didn't know I was learning at the time. I was basically just trying to survive with him and not being made fun of because he's running away and stuff like that. But in the end, they were all really valuable lessons. So I only have really positive emotions when I think about the beginning, how everything started. I was really, I loved it a lot, and I could see myself doing this for a longer time. Of course, I couldn't imagine where it will end up. You know, you never know. But
yeah.
I knew I found something that I like more than anything else before. So, yeah, really good and positive emotions.
And how did it then go more in professional agility? So how, when did then?
Well, more or less by pure accident. No, sometimes stuff just kind of happens without you doing really anything in that direction that you are aware of, that were the steps leading you to your future. No, I always sometimes think the smallest stuff sometimes bring you to where you are today, not really the big decisions. Mm. But well, quite fast after I started, I realized that my Bo was the name of my mixed breed. He's not alive anymore, unfortunately. He died from cancer when he was 9. That I maybe have bigger dreams than he had. I mean, we didn't do only agility. I tried everything with this poor dog. We did some search and rescue. We did tricks. We did some frisbee. Like, everything they were offering, I wanted to try. I was super into dog stuff, and I just wanted to have experience with everything. So he was being dragged to many, many classes and many places that he didn't want to be so much. He was quite happy just sniffing around. So really soon I started thinking perhaps about another dog and so on. But that was the entire big discussion with my parents. I was still living with my parents. I just started university. But still, like, it was not really the easiest to just kind of bring a dog. And there was this financial part. If you want to get a dog that's not a mixed breed, you know, not a dog, but to actually buy, you need to have money for that. And that was also, you know, something you at like 19 and so on, you still kind of need your parents for that stuff. So that was a big part of the problem. And I don't know, I was thinking about the border collie for a while, but I decided to be a rebel because everybody was getting border collies, so I will not get a border collie. No, and there was a guy in the club, Alan Marekovic, who is today actually my good friend, and we have a club together, but at the time I really hated him. He was super full of himself, and he was breeding border collies, and he was the main guy for the border collies. And he was always making fun of me because my mixed breed was running off course, so I also didn't want a border collie partially because of him. I wanted something different and not to have the breed that he's promoting and breeding and so on. I mean, I was a child, but okay. And then I sort of stumbled upon a Kelpie, and I kind of got a Kelpie, actually two Kelpies all the way from Australia. I managed to get my crazy dad on board. He was always the type of doing stupid stuff. Well, my mother was and still is an anchor in every possible way, like keeping everybody grounded, that there is like, yeah, your dreams and there is stuff that you can actually afford. But we still kind of went around her, and we imported not one but two Kelpies directly from Australia. Okay. Male and a female. Yeah, because like it was, if I'm gonna have another dog, then my father wants his own dog as well. So originally the idea was that I get the female, we import a pair, and that he will get the male. And let's say that that's how everything started. I started with this Kelpie female. Unfortunately, we were doing also search and rescue. And quite early in her career, she did something stupid on a rubble training. She jumped off a window and she had a little bit spine injury. Nothing super serious, but enough to get some spondylosis that she was having a lot of trouble jumping. So agility was not an option for her anymore. So I actually started working with the male. And my father kind of went to some basic obedience classes and more or less gave up because that's his style. You know, he gets excited about everything, but then doesn't go through with it. Yeah. So then I didn't really do any more agility with the female, but with the male, with my Will, that I will say he was really my first agility dog. You know, with him, everything started. And I started going on competitions. And yeah, let's say sometimes, not really even having results, but just from time to time, we wouldn't look like complete idiots on the course, but it would start looking like something that maybe would lead somewhere and so on. And then, yeah, then maybe sometimes it would be a clean run and stuff like that. And I had some friends that I was training with at that club. At that time, I was already kind of a full member and I had some privileges and I could go there and I could train when I wanted and so on. And I really wanted to train with somebody important, but nobody really wanted to train me. So we were kind of going and just training together, you know, we would go on a competition and then see what other people were doing and then go back to the club and build it up and try and so on. We were quite adventurous in those things. So yeah, with time, he got better and better and we were improvising the stuff that we didn't know. I mean, before Kelpie, I think, got retrained with everything 20,000 times. And I was, like, getting new ideas and saying, yeah, maybe my 212 can be faster. Maybe the slalom can be faster. I don't know. Maybe he can jump differently and so on. So, yeah, it was, like, a little bit step by step. No, and then, I guess, my first European Open that I went to, that was kind of maybe a turning point, but not even, we didn't do anything there. I mean, we didn't even have to qualify because it's still, sometimes you don't have to qualify because there is so little people that basically whoever wants to go can go. And that year it was very little people. So if I wanted to go, I could go. So I went and it was in Czech Republic in Liberec, long time ago. I can't remember the year, but it was the year where it was everything flooded and it was so much rain and mud. Anybody who was there will remember that. That was like really a unique experience running in ankle deep mud over there. Like we totally destroyed the football field where the competition was held. It was horrible. But I saw people, I watched the finals live for the first time and so on. And it was an amazing experience. And I think then I kind of started pushing that I really want to do this on another level and I want more and so on. And I think by the next year with this Kelpie, we even did something in team. I think we were third in team or something in the team final, something like that. That was one time that Croatia was good in final in European Open. Yeah, so it was a long time ago. But yeah, that's maybe say how things started in a way.
And at this time, you train Will by your own?
Yeah, mostly by my own, sometimes with some other trainers in the club. But after that second, I think it was after the second European Open when we were really not bad. Then Željko Gora, who is also one of the famous Croatian competitors and trainers, he kind of took me under his wing with this dog for the next, I think it was year and a half that I trained with him. Because at the time at the club, like the people who were good trainers, they had an opportunity to pick out people who they wanted to train to sort of make them better if they would feel somebody has potential. And I really wanted to get picked for a long time, but I didn't. But then he finally did. And then I, let's say, started training with somebody in a proper way that I really liked the trainings. And I think we improved a lot at the time. He was already then in agility for like forever. He really started young. So he had a lot of experience and we had this really cool training group. And yeah, I really, really liked it. I was like, whatever problems we had. And if he would offer me a solution, I would really try to go because I could also train on my own. Separately, yeah. I could go when I wanted to take the obstacles. So I was always trying to fix the problems and stuff. I really tortured this poor Kelpie a lot. He had to learn with me.
And how it went and on then? How it continued after Will?
Well, slowly I started to think about another dog again. But again, I didn't want the Border Collie, so I went with a Croatian Sheepdog. Yeah, by that time I was already friends with Alan. It's kind of, we went once to a competition together by accident and then became friends while driving there. And it carried on since then. I think it's been like 11 years or something now already since that happened. Sometimes really life brings you to situations and places that you can never, never imagine will happen. So when you become friends with people you couldn't stand before and so on, and you realize you were totally wrong about stuff. Anyhow, everything slowly changed. So I got a creation sheetbook from him, with whom I like wanted to start everything great from the beginning. And at the same time, my good friends have gotten a border collie who was just a little bit younger than my creation sheepdog, like 3 months or something. And we knew each other with these friends for a while back. We did some search and rescue together and so on. And they just lost their dog quite tragically. And they decided to go for one border collie litter that was kind of, it was from Alan's breeding, but from one other girl that had the mother of these puppies and so on. And it was more like local. The mother was a really, really great dog, but nobody really knew that at the time. And they have gotten the puppy from there, but also at the same time, that friend of mine was pregnant with her first child. So we kind of had a deal from the beginning that if they will not have so much time for this border collie, that maybe I will run with him some stuff and so on. It was more like a friendly deal, whatever. So they're sure the dog will be getting enough of everything that he needs. And sort of when I was like working with my Croatian sheepdog with Reese, and it started to go well. And we also went to European Open. I qualified for the first World Championship, which was like a really big deal with me. It was in Luxembourg. And that was also like really, really cool. But not maybe very successful, because he kind of had big problems with changing surfaces. We didn't have any artificial grass to train on. And he was really cool on the grass. But then he came there on this artificial grass that was not so good as they are today. He was sleeping a lot, and I was very disappointed because he really couldn't keep the speed. He was just sliding everywhere, and he was not the type of dog to adapt. I mean, he still is. He's just like, I can't go. I will try to go faster. And then he was not going anywhere on this slippery artificial grass. So in that way, it was a bit of a disappointment. But I loved the experience, and I just like decided, yeah, we will do it. We will do better somehow and so on. And slowly with this border collie, yeah, the things started to get really interesting because he was really, really fast and really cool. And at first, my friends trained him, and they trained with Alan together. And then sometimes I would take him and train him. And at first, I kind of just took him for some smaller competitions, like if I was going to a nearby country, because Croatia is a very small country. So if you want to compete, you need to go a little bit around, you know, to the neighboring countries. So they couldn't leave the child and just like pick up and go for a weekend or whatever. So I started taking him, and we started having results. Like, he was getting really, really good and really fast. I mean, I was doing well with the Croatian sheepdog also, but I think with this border collie with Viz, who was not even mine, although I ran him on quite an international level afterwards, the thing started to open up a little bit. I don't even know which was the competition. Oh yeah, maybe that was a really fun thing when on this Amadeus Cup that's held in Salzburg. I think they canceled it now, unfortunately, but it was for many, many years. It was such a cool competition. There with him, I got into this knockout, and I lost to Anna Lenz, actually, with Chi. That was the first time I saw her or met her in any way, and we are friends today, so that's also funny that she kicked my ass in the final knockout, so we were second and she was first. Although this was faster than Chi, but head bars, which were always his problem. So it was like, and there you calculate time by mistakes and so on. So in the end, you can be fast. If you have a mistake, then the other one wins. It's the knockout rule. It doesn't matter. But yeah, that was like one of the first super cool experiences with him, like getting into a final or something like that. And I actually had no idea back then that I will become good friends with her in years later. Again, where life takes you, where you don't think you're going to go.
I was thinking the same at the moment. Yeah. Yes.
Oh yeah, my story is full of those moments.
So you talk a lot about some trainings, but what does training with your own dogs look like?
You mean today, I guess, and not back then?
Yes, today.
Well, today I kind of have a lot of dogs right now. I made some mistakes before Corona started by not limiting myself to a certain amount. I think the problem started when I bought a house, you know, and when you buy a house, then you suddenly have a lot of space, and then you start to pile up dogs, and then I get some, kept some from my breeding by accident, and so on. So let's say that at the moment, the training, first thing I can say about the training is that it takes a very long time, because there is a lot of them. Now I have some younger border collies and so on. Yeah, I don't know. I really think it changes literally every 2-3 months how my training looks like and what I feel is important at that time. I mean, at the moment, all the dogs that I'm training are sort of at a level that they are mostly learned the skills that I want them to know, you know, and we are kind of working on finesses and stuff like that. So I'm trying to like train a little bit more courses at this particular moment, because I kind of hope the competition season will pick up a little bit more aggressively, you know, during the winter and the next spring, that we will have the European Open again and the World Championship again and so on. So I'm trying to get on track with, especially with my two older, younger ones, with my Sheltie and my Border Collie female with Daily. With the two of them, I would kind of like to really compete for the next year, because I feel they're ready. I mean, Boom has been ready for 3 years, but Corona stopped everything. Yeah. So we didn't have the opportunities that we would probably normally have. And Daily just started. She had like a couple of months of competing, but like on and off before Corona came. She's now 3.5 and she had a litter in between and so on. So I still kind of feel that we are just starting in a way. And now it's becoming really good on the training. So with the two of them, I'm really focusing on getting the courses together, you know, getting the feeling that I can run stuff with them and to learn how to handle them and so on to prepare for competitions. And with my two younger males, one is 2.5 and the other one is 2. With them, I'm doing partially courses and partially like trying to problem solve the stuff that I know are still not so easy for them, because they are not, let's say they were not really the easiest dogs to work with, so it took me some time to figure them out. So now I can say I'm really happy with the level that we are at and how the stuff are going, but I'm trying to adapt as much as I can to each of them individually to really kind of bring them up where I know they can be, because they're really, really different, all of them. And that can be sometimes a big problem in training, when you try to fit everybody to the same box and you're too tired or mentally exhausted to like adapt to everyone. So it's super important for me to always try to remind myself what are my goals with each of them at the moment, despite the fact that we are training at the same time. And sometimes even the same things, because you simply don't find the time. At least I don't find the time or the opportunities to train them in that way separately. That would maybe be the best, you know. You get a couple of hours for training in a busy working week, and you need to make the most of them together with all the dogs, because I don't know always when training is going to be, when I will find the time to really properly train them. So I don't know if that answered the question, but I guess if you have some tough questions, that would help.
No, of course it was, but there was one really interesting sentence for me, and I think also for the others, when you told like you are changing every 2-3 months your focus, what you train or how you train. Can you explain this a little bit more?
Yeah, but it's more like I really want to evolve in the way that agility is evolving today. And I feel sometimes that it's evolving so, so fast. You know, people are getting such great ideas all the time. There's so many fast dogs. There is so many things happening, even without any competition, really. So on, like, the internet community is so strong right now.
Yes.
That you can really see everything online. And I guess people also had a lot of time in that way during Corona, you know, to refocus and to make things better and so on. So I kind of get new ideas every once in a while, or try to realize the mistakes I was making. Even they can be like smaller type of mistakes, nothing like super major when it comes to training. But, oh shit, I've been doing too many courses or too many difficult stuff for a while. No, so I realized, okay, my youngest, who is still not so secure, he's getting a little bit slower, so also I need to change the way that I'm training, and then I start working more on some motivation stuff, and inventing things, you know, to get him to be crazier. And then I realized some of these ideas I can use for the other dogs also to increase the drive or the focus or whatever. And then I kind of changed the style that I'm training in. It's not really so easy to explain. You know, for a while I was working like on a blacklist. Like a couple of months ago, I had a specific blacklist for every dog with the stuff they're bad at. I really called it a blacklist. Me and my one friend that's like I'm training with today the most, we had like for all of our dogs the blacklist, and we put all the, I wouldn't say bad stuff, but like the, you know, Achilles tendon or how you call it for each dog, because they're all so different. And you know, you run the same course with multiple dogs and you realize that you have quite different problems. Sometimes no. Sometimes you have the same problem with every dog and then you just realize you're being so stupid because you're handling something equally bad with everybody. But that's another thing. Yeah. But sometimes they have such different issues and so on that we just really decided to put a blacklist for each of them. And then I was working from this blacklist. There was some smaller stuff like, I don't know, drifting on a turn or, you know, getting the slalom a bit faster or, you know, getting more focused on the sea. So it was a Sheltie problem for a long time. We had a really crappy season before Corona, so I was retraining that a lot. Or, I don't know, getting my oldest, youngest border collie, the female, daily under control, getting her to come to me because she loves to go away and she doesn't want to come closer and stuff like that. So I was focusing a lot on the blacklist. Then I realized at some point that I'm maybe putting too much pressure on the dogs by just working on the blacklist because every training was hard for them. No, it was not necessarily a hard training, but when you're working all the time on just the stuff that they're not good at and you are not good at with this particular dog, then after a while you realize, okay, it's becoming a little bit too much for them mentally.
Yes.
So I switched again and then we went to a little bit more positive training, focusing not positive in a way being mean or not mean to the dog. I don't mean that. Just focusing also on the stuff that they're good at, that they like to do, you know, to build the confidence in someone. So now I'm trying to kind of squeeze in the blacklist a little bit at a time, but taking care to have some relaxing training that they're doing stuff that they also know and they're good at. You're working more on connection. And as I said, the courses with the two older ones, you know, preparing for competitions and so on. So I'm changing more in that way because kind of the dogs are changing all the time during the training. You know, they're improving, sometimes going even backwards if you have been pushing in the wrong direction for a little bit too long and then you realize you're not getting the result that you want. So I kind of like to keep an open mind and not to get stuck with I have a certain idea how we need to do this and until when I want to have this done, but actually listen to them and to feel how my dogs are responding to this training and if I maybe really need to change something quite fast. And I had this experience with my two younger boys that are, especially one of them, which is like the hardest dog I ever worked with. He really forced me to let go, you know, because the trainings were not going the way I wanted them or the way I planned, or you never knew how he's going to react and what's going to be hard for him, what's not going to be hard. And it took a lot of time for me to change because I'm quite a controlling type of person and I have this idea that I would like this now. And with him, it didn't work. But in the end, it was a very revealing experience and it helped me to adapt myself a lot also for the other dogs in that way, to just listen to them, not always stick by the stuff that I have planned that we are going to do until then and then, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important point, what you are talking about, that because I think in not only in agility, like in all kind of sports with the dogs, they are just making their technique how they make it like 10 or 20 years ago, but they don't like adapt to the dog or they don't see maybe their mistakes. So I really like this view of this point.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I can really say Corona was an eye-opening experience for me because I didn't even realize when everything started, you know, it will be quite soon, 2 years ago since everything started, I think. Time is going really fast. You know, it was March when all of this first lockdown started and we all got super crazy, that when Corona came, instead of feeling bad when everything was canceled, I felt relieved. I mean, at the time I had, my Sheltie was young. He was going, getting really, really good. And he, I was like really, let's say, optimistic about their career, but at the same time, really, really stressed because they got this amazing dog and I really didn't want to fuck up anything with him. And I already did a lot of things. And there is so many expectations, you know, about what young dogs need to know at a certain age. And if you didn't do something by certain time, then probably you're never going to do anything and so on. And I feel it puts, I know I put so much pressure on myself and on the dogs I had at the time. And then when everything was cancelled after this original grief and disappointment period and so on, I realized I feel so much relief and kind of managed to slowly, it was not easy because I think Corona was hard for everybody on so, so many levels, from economical to mental and everything. You kind of just lose track of stuff that were normally guiding you in your life and everything is just kind of gone for a while. But during this, you get a lot of time to think and to realize and maybe make lists and stuff. What can you do better and what can you retrain and how can you use best the time that you now suddenly have and before you wouldn't have, because you can't start retraining stuff in the middle of competition season. You know, you're going for qualifications for all of these competitions and so on. And it's not the best thing for the dog to completely, for example, you know, tear an obstacle apart and put it back together, because they get really confused in competition. So you simply don't do that. You kind of patch it up as much as you can and you continue for as long as it goes, you know, until you realize, like me with my Sheltie, that we don't have a seesaw anymore at all at competition. Yeah. And yeah, when all of this started, I remember there was also this like one period that people were publishing a lot of courses online. It was like a lot of challenges, different judges and stuff and so on. And I was like watching this challenge and watching the courses and like realizing, oh my God, what type of skills you now need for everything and what is expected already from a young dog to be able to do and so on. And I had at the time, I mean, these two younger males, especially one of them, my Nick, I mean, he's a really cool dog, but it was so hard with him. I was really trying to figure out how to work with him, let alone that we're going to be running some crazy courses and having all the skills and so on. He was like on a very emotional level, very difficult dog to connect with and to work with, very worried, very sensitive, and a lot of other stuff. And yeah, I really kind of, during this time, mostly all of this happened mostly during Corona, me training him and everything that we did until now, I really kind of realized how difficult it is to think actually outside of the box and to really adapt to the dog. And also the thing that sometimes nobody can really help you, you know, even when you ask for help. And even the people that are not saying any names, because the names are not important here, people with a lot of experience and so on, but they simply don't know the emotions of the dog that you're working with, you know, or don't, are not able at that moment to understand the situation that you're in. Because especially when you have a dog that has any type of problem, you know, from being insecure to having some jumping issues to having some, I don't know, being too crazy or not being crazy enough or so on, just any dog that you're not really connecting with in a way that you would like, it creates so much emotional stress for the handler and for you as a trainer and so on. And unfortunately, nobody can really understand this situation except you. You know, it's sometimes quite easy to give advice in exactly what you said, the technique type of way. You know, you should do this better. Your dog should turn better. Yes, amazing, but he actually really hates turning, and I have no idea how to make this interesting and fun for him. I tried the conventional methods, I tried the unconventional methods. It didn't work. He was getting more upset and so on. This is just one example. And it's easy to say, yes, you know, you need to work on your turns. You need to work on your outs. You need to work on this. You need to make your contact more secure and so on. But sometimes it doesn't really work like that. You know, and he is the type of dog which his performance is so much connected to his emotional state in the moment. If he's confident, he can do so much and he can think, and he can think in a moment, you know, he can make good decisions and he can understand the verbal cues I'm giving him and so on. The moment he gets stressed, he kind of shuts down and starts forgetting the things he knows and going into stress, stressing behavior before he was even leaving away. He was my first dog ever that I had that he just left the course. You know, I never dealt with something like that before, this dog, and it was really upsetting for me because I couldn't figure out what the hell I'm doing wrong, because I was not doing anything much differently than with the previous dog, and everything worked. You know, you work the technique, you add some motivation and so on, and yeah, you're on agility. But no, with some dogs, it simply doesn't work like that, because he wasn't feeling good when we were training. For him, it was too many verbal cues, too many expectations, too many skills in, let's say, too short of a time. I didn't really know how to introduce stuff to him in a way that he would understand and that he wouldn't be stressed about it, because he's amazingly clever, but he's just not using it for its own good. He's just using it to get stressed, you know, because every choice you make, you can make a mistake. And if you can make a mistake, then it's stress. And this is kind of his default mood. And on the other hand, before that, I worked with this Border Collie female that I mentioned with Daily. She's one of the smartest dogs I ever had, and I think I will have. She has another set of issues. Every dog has something, but she's incredibly clever. She loves verbal cues. She loves verbal games. She loves technique. She loves puzzles. You know, she's just like, give me a problem and let me solve it. And I was so enjoying building her up because everything was really fun. And she was picking up things so easily, like a sponge, you know, just teach me something new. And then you get this male who is like, oh my God, something new. There is a possibility I will make a mistake. Maybe I will not understand. No. And he just shut down. Because in his eyes, if there is a possibility you will not succeed, it's better not to try. And I think that actually, I know, because later, when everything restarted with the seminars and so on, and I started traveling more and meeting people and dogs, and then you realize there is a lot of people with this type of dogs and with this type of stories, know, that tried to work on the technique and to work the conventional way and to just teach the dog stuff and so on, but they were kind of getting to walls in places that you wouldn't expect, you know, not being able to understand what is actually wrong and what is in the dog's head and what is happening and why the dog is not performing in the way you would expect it to perform, considering the amount of work and skills that you have put into the dog. Again, if that makes sense, I went a little bit off topic, perhaps.
Wow. Oh my God, that was so interesting. And I think that's so another view of some training and maybe also give some answers why it's not working. And I honestly don't hear it so clear or so honest from this side. But how was it for you emotional when you have a dog, you train, you try so many ways and it's not working? How was this for you with the male?
It was horrible. I mean, emotionally, sometimes I was crying like hell on the training. You know, the people that I train close to it and they know me well, they know the entire story. They've been with me through the good and bad. You know, they know what kind of small stuff we sometimes consider an effort and so on. They know this journey. And sometimes when I'm talking about this to people who don't know how we started off, especially with this dog, they're having trouble believing that this was actually happening. But I felt really, honestly, like crap most of the time. It was hard. I thought I failed as a trainer. I failed as a person. I failed as a dog owner, as everything. Because after multiple dogs and quite a lot of results, you know, and all of these things, you get a dog that you just can't figure out what the hell this dog needs to make him happy and to make him enjoy this in a way that it should be enjoyed. No, he was just constantly under so much stress, and you get under so much stress and already start anticipating problems will happen. No, and the dog feels that you are stressing as well, and then they start stressing out even more. I think the part that people don't realize is that agility or any type of sport are really stressful for the animals. No, not in a bad way. Not always in a bad way. I mean, adrenaline is also stress, all the same hormones that are all part of the process, but it is all stressful. It is stress on the mind, it is stress on the body, it is stress in every possible way. We just, even the dogs that are, let's say they're enjoying agility and so on, I wouldn't say they're really enjoying agility. They're just adrenaline junkies, just like the rest of us that are doing these dog sports, you know? Because when you get into this feeling of running and everything is crazy, you know, you get addicted to this feeling. That's the reason why you keep going with any sport. I mean, you could find much better use of your time. You could
more it's like a truck. More money. It's for I think for our brain or for also the dog's brain, it's like a truck.
Yes, it's absolutely like a drug. They get really addicted to the adrenaline and to the feeling, and this feeling is what pushes you to the hard times and so on. But not really every dog, especially in modern agility, which is really difficult. You know, today, foundations, in my eyes, like when I think now, because you asked me about this, how I felt in the beginning and what we were doing in the beginning of my agility training, like more than 10 years ago. I didn't think about this for a very long time. But like basic foundations were nothing back then. No, you would teach them to jump, you know, to maybe turn. Turns were kind of just starting to happen, you know, just to learn the obstacles and to connect them in some way. I remember when the out started to happen out on competitions, and it was something like, wow, you know, you need to teach them out. Today, they need to know everything before they're kind of ready for the first competition, you know, the skills and the foundations. It has gotten like so huge, you know. If you would want to write a book about agility foundations, then whenever I think about doing something like to round up all the foundation work, I end up not knowing where to begin because there is so much of that. And it puts a lot of pressure on the dogs to be able to know all that and to react in this adrenaline brain moment. No, because it's not so easy to go 100% fast and have a super clear head at the same time. Some dogs do it naturally, and some dogs, they get really stressed about it. And I think this is the part that is quite hard to understand what is actually happening and why a dog is maybe performing better on training than on competition. And other way around, like my Sheltie was always the biggest example. He loves competitions. He loves the crowds. He loves the atmosphere. He was always better on competitions even than in trainings. And he loves feeling pumped. And when he's pumped, but this is a very Sheltie thing, so I think people recognize this in Sheltie easily, that when a Sheltie is confident, they can do stuff. And when the Sheltie is not confident, yeah, then nothing works anymore. I think all of the Sheltie people will agree with me on that one. But it happens equally with other breeds and with other dogs as well, not only the Shelties, just maybe not on the same level, because the Border Collie will keep running, but perhaps it will be running in the wrong direction, or it will be drifting away or doing some other behavior that you will feel like the dog is maybe not listening to you or not understanding you, or the worst one, not wanting to do what you want, which I think is a complete bullshit. They always want to do their best for you because you raised them like that from the beginning. You kind of brainwash them that working with you is the best thing ever, and they need to make you happy, and they feed from making you happy. They just do a certain behavior because they cannot handle the pressure of doing what you ask them to do at that moment. And this I was not totally aware of before I got this dog, you know, because he, for example, he loves body handling. This is for him super cool. Like if you're running some type of course where I need to do a lot of front crosses and a lot of really physical handling, which is not maybe so popular at the moment, but we still get a lot of those courses around here. Then he's really happy. He kind of just lets go. And this was the first stuff where everything started to work out, because he doesn't have to think too much. He's basically following me and just doing what I showed him. But when you come to the decision type courses, you know, when he needs to take charge and he needs to listen to the verbal cues, he needs to make decisions in a lot of speed, these were the stuff where things started failing, because that part was too much for him to make a correct decision in a lot of speed without slowing down and so on. So his default thing was to really shut down, which, as I said, I noticed already before with the Sheltie, but my Sheltie is quite crazy and has a really good head for a Sheltie, so we kind of pulled through. And with him, it really made me rethink everything that I'm doing and what to do and how to do and how to get him in a state of mind when he's in which he's capable of performing the way I know he can, and actually utilize all the skills that we learn. Because in the end, there are so many great dogs today, you know, that it's really the super small stuff that makes the difference.
Yeah, you know? It is.
So the dog really needs to be super relaxed and clean in the head while running, you know, to be able to utilize everything that you train them. And some dogs can do that naturally. Some simply can't. You know, with some, it's really, really difficult. And I think there is many more of those dogs than the easy type of dogs. You know, just perhaps in today's agility with everything and all the demands that we're putting on those dogs kind of get neglected in a way. And when it's easier to just give up and to take another one or try again and so on than to try to really figure out how to work it with this particular dog. And it, unfortunately, it's a reality. You know, this what's kind of normal in, let's say, more, I wouldn't call them advanced, but more money-orientated animal sports like horses and stuff, that if things are not working with a certain animal, you replace the animal. This is kind of starting to happen also in agility. I mean, it's been present forever. But yeah, I don't know. I know a lot more examples today because the pressures and the demand and so on are much, much bigger. And of course, not every dog is capable of meeting those expectations. Not everybody will become the next world champion or whatever your goals and priorities are. I'm going to let you talk a little bit.
Oh, thank you. There was a statement of you from the pressure for the dog. Do you think you can train when the dog don't bring this natural? Can you train it in some way or with some exercises, in your opinion?
You mean for the dog to be able to withstand pressure?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you can, and I've been trying to do that, like...
Can you explain this a little bit?
...longer time now. Yeah, I mean, it really depends upon the dog, no? It's not really something that I can easily summarize in a couple of sentences, but pressure can be, in my eyes, a lot of different things. Like, maybe the easiest thing to think about is, and I spoke about this a lot with some people in the last year or two because it's been a really interesting topic for me, is, for example, training the dog when they're tired. Like, when the dog is physically tired, then they're feeling the body pressure and the tiredness and so on, the simple fatigue a lot. And when you continue training the dog when they are tired, they are feeling a lot more pressure than in the beginning of the training. You know, because when they're fresh, everything is much easier, the head is easier and so on. Like also when you're doing some physical training of your own, there is always this one moment when you're simply physically and mentally so exhausted and you really need to push yourself through that. You know, you just need to say, okay, fuck, I'm going to finish this exercise. I'm going to finish this run or this whatever you're doing. Although you feel that both your body and mind are failing you a little bit. So this is maybe the not the best example, because I'm not saying train your dogs until they die. But it's maybe the easiest one to understand that sometimes I'm training the pressure by working the dogs a little bit longer than they are. Not, I wouldn't even say physically capable of, I never go over the limit, but a little bit more than they are completely ready for at that moment, you know, combining the mental and the physical abilities. But in this type of training, I'm trying to not do the super difficult stuff when the dog is tired, you know, but just to, for example, continue, like already at the end of the training, and I feel that there is no chance that we're going to be able to do more difficult stuff, but maybe we can do a couple of rounds or just like a couple of repetitions of something that's easy, mentally easy for the dog. So I can train a little bit more of the physical part that they, even if they feel their body is tired, that they teach themselves that the mind has to push you through. Like for my Sheltie, this is the dog walk. He loves the dog walk and he would do the dog walk literally until he drops dead. And this is his safe obstacle. You know, whenever he gets the dog walk, that he's super, super happy. So for him, if I want to push him a little bit over the limit, I will do a couple of more dog walks, you know, that he still needs to do and he needs to pull through. Maybe sometimes with a little bit more difficult exit, but not something that I'm not sure he will be able to do. You know, and then I will push him a little bit over the limit and so on. With my younger ones, I sometimes do like one more repetition than what I feel is the best for them. You know, it all depends. Let's say that in the learning process, when they're still learning a certain skill, no matter what it is. Is it an obstacle, way to do a certain sequence or whatever? Then I always try to finish at the perfect moment, no, not pushing them over the limit and just allowing them to have the clear head and to be able to process what we learned. There, I never put too much pressure. But with skills that they already know, and I know they're on quite a good level, there I sometimes ask for one more and a little bit more and so on, just to get them that even when they feel the mind is tired and the body is tired, you need to give that extra push, you know, which in the end, I think in competitions helps the dog to help you when you need them in a certain situation, because it trains the mind and the body to last longer. But of course, there is this entire second part of everything, which is the physical conditioning and the training and the preparation, because you cannot do those things if your dog is not physically ready. I spend a lot of time conditioning my dogs in many, many different ways. So I know that this type of training will not lead to an injury because their bodies are ready. I'm not trying to kill the body. I'm trying to, let's say, not kill, but kind of push the mind to go one step more. But also, not always, not with every dog, not with every situation. You need to kind of know your dog well that you are able to do stuff like that. Because if you do that way too often and with a dog that's not mentally ready for that kind of stuff, then you can completely get an opposite effect because they always feel crappy when they're training. You know, it's always a bit too much. You're always pushing too much. You're always asking that one step more and they're not ready for that. And then they can so easily remember this feeling that they're not feeling good when they're doing that. And if they're not ready to deal with this feeling, then you can get the dog to quit instead of building them up not to quit so easily, which was the primary goal.
So interesting.
I don't really have anything super specific. I'm trying to think about the stuff that I'm doing lately with my dogs and so on. But yeah, maybe during the conversation later, I will think of some maybe closer example. But it's not really easy because dogs are so, so, so different and everything is so different from training to training. Like maybe one good example is we had a crazy, crazy hot summer this year. Like I know that some other countries were a lot of
Germany
rain,
not.
A lot of other I mean, I was in Germany during the flood, so I experienced that firsthand. But yeah, all the rain that you got, we didn't get here. We had really crazy, crazy temperatures, like up to 40 degrees for so many days, which is, we are a hot country, but not that hot. No, this is, I think, the hottest summer that I remember since I'm alive. No, and it was hot outside, it was hot inside, it was hot all around. And this was a tremendous extra pressure for the dogs, you know, training in the heat, for example. And we couldn't avoid it because whenever you were training, it was hot. I was sometimes coming to train at 6 a.m, you know, the moment the sun is up, I'm at the field trying to like get two or three hours of sort of cool weather that you can still use to be able to effectively train, because at some point at 12 o'clock when it's 40 degrees, you cannot do anything. You can take your dog swimming and that's it when it comes to being outside. So this was for all of the dogs really, really challenging, because if you wanted to train, you needed to deal with heat. And we had a couple of situations also with this young male that I was talking about, the difficult one, that even when I thought we went past some of the issues, the issues came back because it was so hot and so hard that I think for some weeks he really felt crappy every time we were training. You know, he would start out happily and then got hot so easily and so fast because the weather was just crazy that he would start feeling bad. And he started to connect this feeling with agility trainings. And as I said, with him, the feeling is everything. And we started to regress. You know, the stuff that I thought we were past, some insecurities, some stresses and so on, everything came back just because he always felt hot and he always felt bad. And he started to learn that, yes, if I give 100%, you know, I will burn out, I will feel horrible, I will not be able to cool down. It became a big extra stress for him and it was really, really hard to deal with. At some point, I even took like a little bit longer training break with him just to try to figure out, you know, what to do, or to wait for a little bit cooler weather or whatever, you know, in order to get him back to where we were before. And this was something that I couldn't influence a lot on. You know, I can't make it easier. The weather is how it is. And it was either we will train or not train. And maybe we shouldn't have trained. But on the other hand, I don't think summers are going to get any better. You know, it feels that everything is getting hotter in general. And you do have to go to competitions when it's hot as well. You know, yes. Originally, like, the last European Open was originally supposed to be in Portugal. It was supposed to be freaking hot. I mean, the last European Open that I went to was in the Netherlands, and it was freaking 40 degrees during the day. The dogs were running in a crazy heat. So you want to have them prepared for that as well. You can't just bring them into the heat and say, yeah, yeah, now run, you know. And they are never used to that, and they've been only training in perfect conditions and so on. So this was also something I was thinking a lot about, and maybe what to do better next summer to prepare them better, to start earlier with some conditioning training in heat and so on, to bring the body so the mind is able to withstand another summer of this, because I don't really feel things are going to get better. I have a feeling it's only going to get worse with the climate change and with everything. It's already been a really hectic summer in general. Like a lot of countries, maybe not Germany, yes, but had much hotter summers than they're usually used to. I was in Sweden this summer and it was crazy hot. They didn't know what to do with themselves. They're absolutely not used to this type of heat. And this is a big, big stressor for the dogs, especially for some dogs that are having more troubles to cool down. It becomes mentally hard. And yeah, I mean, when you all the time feel crappy when you're doing something, then of course you slowly start losing motivation to do it, and it's getting harder and harder. So this is perhaps one quite easy example to understand of stress and pressure and so on, that it doesn't have to be any kind of training pressure. We can be doing super easy stuff, but if you're getting so hot that you don't know how to deal with this, it can become a big pressure in the mind as well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But I think that also a lot of people, not only like in agility, like in global dog handlers and dog lovers, are not thinking in this way, that this emotional state is so much important, or that it can also be the reason that something is not working.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I really love, for example, watching obedience, like obedience on a high level. It's become really, really interesting for me, because they have this really specific and all the time the same exercises, let's say. There is not so much variation as in agility. Like in agility, I feel every course is a new puzzle, you know, a new puzzle that you need to put together. You need to figure out the best way to solve this puzzle with the skills that you have and so on. And obedience is so much about details, because really the exercises are not changing all the time. You have similar stuff and similar layouts and so on in every competition, and they get judged so harshly on everything. And some of the really good trainers that I started following a little bit on the internet and so on, because as agility went online, so did obedience and everything during Corona. So things became, I would say, more accessible than they were before. So it was quite easy and interesting to follow certain people and what they're doing. They're taking a lot of care and talking a lot about the emotional states of the dog. Because when you're doing such repetitive drills, if the dog is not in a great emotional state, you get points docked for the smaller mistakes. You know, they actually get points down if the dog is not feeling good while doing this training.
Yes.
And in agility, there is a lot more adrenaline. And when adrenaline takes over, then you can have a misconception that your dog is feeling great and they're running fast and so on. And that every time a dog is running fast, the dog is feeling great. And that's not true. Dogs can be running to the top of their speed, but they're feeling stressed and they're feeling bad, and they're not, to say, they're not clean and clear in the head and relaxed in order to receive information. No, dogs can be running full speed in a completely opposite direction than the one you want them to go. And that doesn't mean if they're running into some tunnel or whatever, that doesn't mean that they're doing that because they're crazy. They're doing that because they're either not completely understanding you, or even they're sometimes understanding you, just a certain situation is too emotionally stressful for them and they cannot handle what you're asking of them in that particular moment. You know, and I think this is the big misconception, because we work so much with adrenaline pumped dogs, and then we feel, yeah, you know, they're feeling great, everything is great, and actually it's not, you know. Yes. And in another type of dog sport, like obedience, where things are generally much calmer and much more repetitive, then you can really feel if the dog is feeling great while doing the routine, or the dog is feeling stressed, you know. And that's why so many methods simply vanished, because on high level you cannot use any type of too much pressure methods and so on, because it will be visible in the way your dog is performing. And in agility, when adrenaline takes over, some stuff kind of can, let's say, I don't know, can get overlooked, you know. And you can get to a certain level in different kind of ways, and sometimes the dog can even be performing okay, but not really feeling great the entire time. I mean, I'm not saying, not even saying the dog should feel amazing the whole time they're running. I mean, everything is a little bit stressful and so on. But the general connection between the dog and the handler should be in a way that the dog can withstand all of the stuff that you're asking them without shutting down. You know, it's sport, absolutely, like every other sport. And on a super high level, I mean, there were so many things when people were talking during the Olympic Games a month ago or whatever, when it finished. I remember I was like reading an article about a girl that was performing the gymnastics. I don't know the English word for this. I have to figure out how to. The one when they're on these poles, you know, and they're doing crazy stuff on the poles.
Yes. Part of it. You like know, the barrier or something.
No, not even barrier. The one, you know, they put their hands on them and they're spinning their bodies around them and so on. It's part of the gymnastics, the bars. I think it was the bars that one of the, like, super professional athletes, which was, I don't really know a lot about this because I don't follow it really, so I don't know the names or anything, but it was a really interesting thing. She was talking about this feeling that when she's performing, you know, it's been so many training hours, so many things that were put into that, and she's doing stuff a lot on muscle memory, you know, just kind of trusting her body to take over through a routine that they repeated millions of times. And that she, I think she even kind of gave up or like pulled out of the games at that moment, because it happened when she was doing one of these crazy things in gymnastics, and they really do crazy shit there. It's really dangerous. No, if anything small goes wrong, everything goes to hell super fast. That she had this moment that she kind of, spaced out during a routine, and that she felt that she was not trusting her body and she was not sure what's going to happen next. And I think she finished the routine, but she got totally freaked out. And when this stuff started to happen, there were then a lot of other discussions about this and so on. Then it's becoming super dangerous because they don't trust themselves anymore. They don't trust the muscle memory. They don't trust the body and so on. And it's a tremendous pressure doing such a routine. And then when you think about your dogs running on a high level, running super crazy over the dog walk or some other obstacles and so on, and performing actually quite similar crazy shit in very, very high speed while you're basically just jogging there next to them, how they can feel at some point, you know, when you're maybe asking them to do something super fast that they're also not completely physically okay with, you know? Like that moment when the dog, I don't know, refuses to go on a dog walk or refuses a certain obstacle or doesn't manage to do an out or whatever, that so many times it can also happen that the dog is not 1,000,000% sure that their body will manage to do that. You know? And when you get this kind of feeling that there is no, of course, that you're not feeling great. You know? And then it all depends upon the training and the mental stability of the dog, in a way, if they will manage to pull through that situation and still trust their bodies and still try, or will they give up? You know, it's really crazy stuff that we're expecting them to do, and I don't blame them for sometimes maybe even not wanting to. You know, and also not every dog is in the same physical capabilities or the same body understanding, and people are still doing way too little about that and thinking much more about the agility part of the training than everything else that has to be on a certain level in order to expect the dog to perform. But it's not only the brain, it's also the body, and everything is connected. Now, if you're not feeling your body can do something, then of course that your brain is getting insecure and everything is going to help. But I don't know if we are always aware how much we are asking from dogs in modern agility, in these high-speed courses and some crazy stuff and so on. Yeah, okay, I'm going to stop now and let you
ask. No, that's so interesting. And I think it's also so important to talk about this. In my mind is now some question, because you are also a breeder of Border Collies. And
yeah,
in,
let's say.
Yeah, yes. And in my mind is the question, do you think that you can see this as a puppy? You know, if for later on the dog is like stable in this, in a run, or no?
Honestly, no. No. And I think this is even a big problem, and maybe I would say my biggest fear as a breeder. No, because I breed more like recreationally, not really like many litters and so on. I had a couple of litters now during Corona, but it was more because I was at home, so that was the perfect time for everybody to have a litter, and it kind of just happened. But normally I don't plan to breed that much in the future if stuff resume the way that I hope they will resume. But, people are also searching for a lot in a puppy. Really a lot. And you get like, yeah, I want the dog to be stable and not afraid of things and to be this and to be that. And they're kind of trying to see so much in such a small puppy. It kind of reminds me like, just do you really feel that you can look at a baby and be aware of all the possibilities and all the potential that this little person has for the future and how things will develop? And can you really see with people, even like a little bit older child, everything that can happen and how much they will have to grow and change and so on? And I think with dogs, since they cannot really talk and so on, it's even harder. And sometimes I can see stuff and I try really hard to like follow also the dogs from my breeding and some other dogs and so on, watch as many puppies as possible and try to find some patterns. But I think so much depends on what you do with them afterwards and how their life situation is happening, and some small stuff that you maybe don't realize that you should have done differently with this type of dog and so on, that everything together forms the dog's personality. I think there is not a lot you can really know when you're picking a puppy. And this is an issue, and this is the problem. And I know for a lot of people, this is the problem, and it's hard to choose the puppy. You're choosing your partner for the next, hopefully, many, many years. And it can be really, really, really difficult. They change super fast, especially in this, like, from 6 to 8 weeks development phase. So many things that you can notice with some puppies at 8 weeks you cannot see with 6 weeks. Or maybe you can if you know what you're watching for. But, yeah, it's super, super hard. And this is actually a really, really sensitive topic, because I sometimes feel that it's very hard for breeders, especially if you're kind of breeding an agility litter, and you have people that really want to pick a dog for agility and so on and have high expectations. It can be really, really hard for a breeder to give them a puppy and you actually have no idea how things are going to work out. And yeah, I mean, let's say when I'm thinking about these boys that I had some issues with and so on, I didn't see any of that coming when they were puppies. My most sensitive one, he was quite a cool puppy. That was part of the reasons why I kept him. It was kind of accident that he stayed with me. It's a long story and it doesn't matter. But I couldn't feel at that moment that he will have so many issues, and not even issues in that way, just so many problems with his insecurities and stuff, because in a way, he doesn't have any environmental problems. He's a very stable dog in every type of environment. He likes people. He likes other dogs. He likes everything. Nothing is a problem. He's like a happy dog in that way. So in a litter, the stuff that you can say, yes, he was quite nice and stable and he was coming to people, he was playing with toys and so on. The problem started when you started asking for specific stuff. you know, a little bit harder stuff, putting a bit more pressure on the dog, asking a lot of thinking and so on. Not the puppy games, because when you're building up a puppy, you're trying to really be positive and to adapt and so on, and you're doing a lot of playing and a lot of make everything happy and so on. You're not really stress testing the puppies at this age, and even if you would be stress testing them in some way, it wouldn't be a guarantee of anything what a puppy can withstand with 6 weeks or with 8 weeks. They will actually develop into a, to say, stable adult. You know, some stuff you can see, but sometimes dogs develop in a way that you really couldn't have anticipated. There are so many factors here. I mean, some things you can maybe predict if you know the parents well. This is one thing, especially if you had the parents or have known the parents when they were puppies. Because sometimes some stuff can really be transferred to the next generation, and then I can positively say, yes, this is just a phase, or yes, you need to take care of this or that, because that maybe will turn into something else, because this was a similar path that was happening with the mother or with the father and so on. So this can make things easier. But without knowing the parents, or without really knowing the, say, the entire story between possible problems in those lines and the type of border collies that you're breeding and so on, it can be really, really, really difficult. And you can pick a puppy thinking that this puppy is the best puppy from the litter, and then later it turns out that that puppy can't stand that much pressure or whatever, and sometimes like the underdog turns out to be the best puppy of the litter. But most of the time it depends upon what a person does with the puppy and how much they manage to adapt to this certain dog. No, instead of just kind of trying to fit them in the way of training and working that they have been doing with the previous dog or with more previous dogs and so on. So it's again a hard question to answer, and a little bit emotional one, because you always hope for the best and you always want the people to be in love with their puppies and for them to have the best life and so on. And sometimes expectations can be a terrible thing, because every time I sell a puppy, I want that puppy to feel loved for who he, she is, not for who the person, I mean, the new owner, the handler, wants them or expects them to be. And this is difficult. You know, this is the most difficult thing in that way. Sometimes I would rather be breeding like for pets, you know, and just go live happily ever after, and doesn't matter, you know, you don't have to be anything, it's fine. You know, but it's the reality. And even when you're saying you don't have expectations, you always have expectations when you're getting another dog. This is just a normal part of the lives that we are leading. No, nothing wrong with that. Just it's hard that way for a breeder. So, yeah, tough question.
To go once more further with the thought, when a dog is maybe not stable in the mind and he cannot handle the pressure, do you think it makes sense still to keep him in training, like in professional training? Or do you think it's just like a personal thing that I want that the dog is doing this?
Yeah, that's also a hard question to answer. I mean, I am not the type to give up on anybody or anything. I mean, I think that every dog has a certain potential, and it's up to you as a trainer and a person to try and reach that to the best of your abilities. And I didn't want to give up with, whenever I had any type of issues throughout my life, I didn't like to give up on any dog, because I don't really think it's the dog that has a problem. You know, it's just that even this thing with tending the pressure and so on, it's a little bit, to say, not a palpable thing, you know, to talk about. It can be so different, and it's so metaphorical in a way. What do you think about pressure? You know, what this pressure really is, what is the performance pressure, and what level do you feel that you're going to be working with the dog and so on. It can vary so much that it's hard to kind of say, you know, yes, this dog will never be able to compete on a high level or whatever. I really believe that if you transform yourself as a trainer and try to find a good way for this dog, you can make it work, because ultimately the dogs really want to work for you. We breed them so they want to work for you. No, to have this crazy connection. They're not doing agility because they are crazy about doing agility, because there is too much work involved in agility today, you know, for it to be pure pleasure. They're doing it because of the connection with the person. And if you don't have this connection, it's not the dog that had the problem. You know, you didn't manage to adapt to this certain dog, which is also okay. And if you feel that you will not manage and that you it's too hard for you to try, it's maybe better to give up and to do something different and so on. But if you want to grow as a person, as a trainer, as a dog handler and everything, you need to be able to, how to say, accept failure and learn from it. And not take the fact that it didn't work as a bad thing, but as kind of another challenge, you know, something to make you think more, to make you find other solutions, to make you think outside of the box, to adapt in any way, like in crazy sort of ways. Because if you, especially also if you want to train other people, you know, you will get different people with different dogs and with different problems. And it doesn't all fit in the same mindset, in the same box, in the same type of training, in the same everything. And if you don't allow yourself to have an experience with your own dog, no, because you either gave up or just decided that it's not worth it, then I don't know, it's hard to help other people. And I really love that part. I love the feeling on training or on a seminar or whenever, when I manage to somehow find a good solution for a certain team and I see that it's working, that they're both getting happier, that they're like enjoying the relationship and the work more because of some small advice that I maybe thought about. It makes me feel really, really great. I kind of thrive on that. And this is the reason why I like teaching and why I like what I do and I like the training and so on, because of that feeling, you know, when it works and when you figure it out, it's a great feeling. No, this is like the biggest fuel for all of this that you're doing and so on. Yes, I love competitions. I love all of that. I love the adrenaline and so on, but I love this feeling the most, you know, when it's just working between you and the animal, or when you make it work for some other people. Because everybody, when it's not working with their dog, they're feeling frustrated. And this is not a good feeling for anybody. And if you manage to help with that feeling, that's a great thing. You make those people feel better. They will enjoy the training more, and maybe you made their day better and some other stuff will be better. I mean, it's all connected also for us, the emotional states and the state of mind and so on. So I don't know. I mean, I thought about giving up many, many times when I was struggling, but I'm so grateful that I didn't, because I would never learn the stuff that I learned if I didn't carry on. And I can't say for my dog if he enjoyed it or if he didn't enjoy it. Of course, it was a struggle for him as well. But in the end, he was bred also to love working with me, you know, and the connection that we sometimes feel today is like irreplaceable. You know, this feeling when I kind of feel, I think I figured it out. I think we will make it work. I think the dogs also feel that, you know, and if you don't push and if you don't kind of force yourself to get to the place, you're missing out. You know, you're missing out on this great feeling and this great connection with this dog. And it doesn't matter if you're going to win, if you're not going to win, because still some dogs are simply faster than the other dog, you know, and always somebody will be faster than you. This is just a reality today. You know, sometimes you will win, sometimes you will not win. And that's something you need to accept. And yes, push to be better and everything, but you can't win everything. But if you get to this feeling with your dog that you're working as a team and that you overcame the struggles, I think this is something that you carry on and the reason why in the end you do it, or at least you should do it, because still there is an animal on the other side. You know, you're not totally alone. And yeah, I feel also with my dogs that when I am really happy with what we did and they are really happy with what we did, that this is the feeling why they do it as well. No, so I don't really think giving up is always the best option. Of course, know yourself. If you think it's just going to be more and more frustrating, sometimes letting it go for a while can be a good thing. Taking a break can be a good thing. No, just for some time, let it go for a while. See, maybe you can do some other stuff. Maybe you can do some other type of dog sport with your dog and find your connection elsewhere, and then maybe later bring it back to agility. There is a lot of different paths that can lead you to the same place. You know, if that place is that you want to feel good with the dog, if we're not talking only about winning and stuff all the time.
Such a strong statement from your side. Amazing, really.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, really, I'm impressed. But time is running by checking the clock, and I don't want to break down your words because I think you told us so much important things. But we have in the end always some short questions and short answers, and maybe we will make a second episode with you because I prepare 33 questions and I ask you four.
Sorry.
Only four, but really, I liked it so much, so I don't want to break this down. I'm absolutely happy with each sentence you told us. So are you ready for the short questions and short answers?
Yes, I'm ready.
So let's start. Agility is for me.
A way of living.
Favorite obstacle in agility?
Dog walk.
My dogs are for me.
My family.
The most important sentence I have ever heard in training.
Whew. Okay, here I will go with not really a training, but more kind of a mindset type of thing. And I heard it quite recently. It's, I did my best and that's enough.
Nice. Agility in my country will increase in the next 5 years.
I really hope so, but I don't believe it.
So thanks, Nina, for being my guest and the guest in this podcast. Thanks again for your time. It was really amazing for all what you share with us.
Thank you for the invitation. It felt kind of good to share. I hope that at least somebody who listened maybe found themselves in certain stuff and that it maybe helped in any way, at least to feel better that if you're struggling, you're not alone.
That's a nice ending sentence. Thank you so much and have a nice evening.
Thank you. You as well.
See you. Bye.